Collective Minds Radio.
Stand on your square, we on the earth, we about to earn it out. Tune in and turn it up to hear what we talking about, whether it's old or a new point. Call in with your viewpoint and add to our collective of colorful perspectives. The brothers, word to the mothers of the queens and the kings. We gon' get into some things, dig deep and going deeper, waking up the sleeper. Who peepin' the peeper? Yeah, your boy done found a keeper. See, we talking.
It is what it is.
Peace, family. We are back. This is Cosmic Kev, a.k.a. Brother Kev.
And this is your girl, Rigel.
Hotep, Brother Ghani, and Assalamu Alaikum. This is Brother Montoya, a.k.a. Mufasa Ra.
And we are Collective Minds Radio. We back again for another week, hopefully to share some constructive dialogue with the family. It has been a busy week. This here at Collective Minds, like we always say, we don't all have to think alike, but we all have to think. So, do it. You did. We're going to get right into it. It's been a busy week as far as the news cycle. But before we get started, and also, hold on, we have a special guest joining us as well here in a few, so stay tuned. But before we get started, Sister Ryder and Brother Mufasa, how was y'all week, and do y'all have any announcements for us?
I had a great week, pretty interesting and busy, as you already alluded to, but no announcements. I'm just ready to get right in.
Yes, indeed, Brother Mufasa. Any announcements for the family? How was your week, brother?
Hey, weekend was blacktastic. And, of course, I have to make an announcement. Next Sunday, October the 13th, is the Holy Day of Atonement. If you all are not familiar what that is the 24th anniversary of the Million Man March. And for those of us who can remember 24 years ago how impactful the Million Man March was to the black community. So we'll be celebrating October the 13th next Sunday, the 24th anniversary of that. If you're able to go to Chicago, Minister Farrakhan will be speaking live in Chicago. And I also wanted to invite anyone in the St. Louis area. If you can't make it to Chicago, you can come to March 28, 5967 West Florence, and we'll be live streaming that event.
All right. Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed, family. Yeah, I don't have any announcements. I want to, you know, kind of get straight into it. This week, family, we are covering the Amber Geiger murder trial. As you know, we had touched on it last week. They had just wrapped up the trial phase and they were going into the sentencing phase. So this week they actually gave the sentence, and we have a special guest joining us as well to share his expertise upon this subject matter. So give us a call with your questions and comments. The number is 929-477-1697. So yeah, if you remember last week, family, we had talked about the murder trial of Amber Geiger, September 6th of 2018. Amber Geiger was off duty. She claimed that she walked into the wrong apartment and shot Botham Jean in his apartment. So that trial was last week, and it had wrapped up. And I like to break this down into three phases, right? We got the trial phase, we have the sentencing phase, and then we have the aftermath of everything that occurred after the sentencing. And family, when I tell you it's been an emotional roller coaster for everyone, that's just what it's been. It's been crazy, and it's been a lot going on. So, we want to share our thoughts and comments. And again, we have a special guest joining us to do the same thing as well. So, we can get right into it. When the trial first started, I'll just say this real quick, and then I'll let Brother Mufasa and Roger go. When the trial started, the main thing that they were kind of putting out there is, you know, we had a black judge, there were five black jurors, and then they said there were five Latino, Asian, and two white. Now, the five Latino and Asian, I'm not sure why they said that, because they wanted to make it seem like there's some type of minority coalition. But we know a lot of times that the Latino and Asians, they also have a anti-black sentiment. So I just wanted to say that to the family, because we cannot get caught up in thinking there's some magical minority coalition with these people, when a lot of times they identify with the white supremacists or they have anti-black views themselves. So basically, from my point of view, there were five black jurors and there were seven white jurors. Right. They were talking about there were black bailiffs and a black staff. And as it turns out, that all came into play, you know, as this trial transpired. So just real quick, you know, if you guys want to give a quick overview of the trial and your thoughts, the sentencing phase or the aftermath, you know, if y'all want to give y'all thoughts, I guess in about, you know, 2 to 3 minutes, that way we can bring our guest in, you know, once he calls up. So I guess we go to you, Sister Rigel. Out of everything that transpired this past week with the trial, the sentencing phase, and then everything that happened after, can you summarize your thoughts and what you thought about everything?
Oh, my thoughts is that it was like a big production. It was like a movie. It was a great production. A lot of things seemed staged. I'm not saying every single thing about the situation was, but it did appear that there was some staging around the situation. And it was interesting, you know, how they did make that announcement about, you know, who they have and all the staff and all that. That was a red flag in itself, the fact that they was even announcing all of those things. And at that point, I'm like, okay, well, yeah, here, you know, now the show is about to start, you know. So I thought that was interesting. You know, I didn't necessarily clap for it, because it, you know, it brought concerns to me. So I was just, it just raised more of an eyebrow than anything. As far as the sentencing goes, I mean, it is, I don't think it really goes with the verdict. You know, they may as well had to just change the verdict. You know, but
right. So let the family know what the sentence was, in case somebody may have missed it. She was sentenced to 10 years. Yeah, she was sentenced to 10 years.
But you may as well say 5, because they did announce too that all she have to do is at least a minimum of 5 before she's eligible for parole. I've been hearing other people say other things, but I personally did hear myself that they said, you know, during that trial, that if she does a minimum of 15 years, then she'll be eligible for parole. So I'm saying she just got 5 years, because I'm sure in 5 years she'll be out, if they don't figure out a way to change some of the laws, that way she can get out even sooner than that. But, you know, they did, you know, sentence her to what they say was 10 years, but realistically she will just do a minimum of 5 for murder.
Okay. Right, for murder in both of them. Brother Mufasa, real quick, you know, what are your thoughts overall on this trial, her being convicted of murder, being sentenced to 5 years? And we ain't even got into the other stuff, you know, the extra fiasco that went on. But, you know, just your thoughts on the trial and her sentence.
Well, as a follower of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, I have to say this first. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad was a man that taught us to respect the law of God. He was a man that taught us also to respect the laws of man. There is no civilization, no nation, no society that is ordered if that society does not have law. okay? And when we have a society that has law and the citizens of that society do not respect that law, then you have a disordered society. So saying it to say, I respect law, okay? And people who, quote, unquote, uphold the law or, you know, cops, judges, they should be held to the same standards of the laws of the land. So Amber Geiger, being a police officer, what she did was a crime. The jury found her guilty of committing the crime, okay? So you're found guilty. Me, myself, when it came down to the trial aspect of it, I was hoping that she would at least be found guilty of manslaughter. I was shocked when they came back, honestly, myself, shocked that they came back with guilty of murder, because as we know, not only do police officers, you know, not get hit with that case, but especially in a case where you have a white officer killing a black person. So I was shocked when it came back as murder. Okay, you have to know that the laws of the land are different in different states. So when it came down to what Texas had, she was found guilty. Okay, now we're at the sentencing phase of it. They threw out there 5 to 99 years. Okay, the prosecutors asked for 28. Now, because of Amber and all the, she was apologetic. She showed sympathy and remorse for what she, you know, for her crime. In my opinion, that's what led the jurors to be a little bit more lenient on the citizens, on the on Amber. Also, when they brought up the, you know, the character man, I don't want to butcher his name. Say his name for me again. Brother Bo, I say Bo, but what is his name?
Botham Jean.
So when they was talking about the character of Botham and saying how he's the type of person that will forgive, be forgiven, he was a Christian person and all that, that played into the psyche, in my opinion, of the jurors. So here they are. And matter of fact, even when they interviewed the jurors, if I'm not mistaken, one of the jurors even said that. So they were compelled to try to put themselves in Botham's place and be forgiven. So that was playing mind games on them. So I'm not surprised with the guilty verdict. I'm surprised about it being murder with the citizen. I get it. 10 years. Hey, we're lucky that they, because it was a police officer, we're lucky we even got that.
Right.
I think they gave her the lenient sentence because of the character of Botham. And I'll say one other thing before we get too deep, because I want to throw this out there.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes down to what, how the judge
behaved. We have to bring our guests on, too.
Yes, ma'am. When it comes down to how the judge behaved, the brother behaved, and the
bailiff.
The bailiff and the bailiff behaved, I'm going to throw out one thing, Stockholm Syndrome. I'm going to put that case out there for that. Some may say I'm reaching. Some may say I'm going too far. But that's how I look at what they were suffering from is Stockholm Syndrome, which is a condition which allows hostages to develop a psychological alliance with their captors during captivity. And we've been held captive. I'm talking about black people have been captive in this country for over 400 years. And I'll stop
yes,
there.
Indeed.
I'll digress that.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. Well said, brother. What we're going to do now, family, this is Collective Minds Radio. We are discussing the Amber Geiger murder trial, sentences, and the aftermath that that happened after that. We want to bring in our special guest. This man is one of the lawyers for the Botham Jean family, along with Lee Merritt and Benjamin Crump. And he is from the Washington law firm. We have Mr. Daryl K. Washington. Are you with us, sir?
Yes, I am.
Yes, indeed. Thank you. First of all, I want to thank you for sharing some of your Sunday evening with us and expertise of being close to this case. So we want to thank you for joining us. And before we get started, you know, if someone have not heard of you, is there an introduction or something you want to let us know about it before we get into the conversation, sir?
Well, just very briefly, my practice, I practice civil rights law and other complex litigation matters. I'm based in Dallas, Texas. I've been handling litigation matters now for 20 years. Website for additional information is www.dwash, that's D-W-A-S-H, lawfirm.com.
All right. Thank you, sir. I guess before we get into the case, this is some breaking news that just happened within the past few days. There was a major witness who actually lived across the hall from Botham John by the name of Joshua Brown. And there have been reports that he has been murdered. So I wanted to know, did you have any insight on that? Did you have any news, you know, besides what's reported? Or what can you tell us about his murder thus far?
I mean, all I can really confirm for you at this point is that he has indeed been killed, shot multiple times by an unidentified individual. Other than that, I do not have much information. You guys probably have as much as I do at this time.
Yes, indeed. And for me, it looks very suspicious. I believe they said it was an ambush type of killing, and he was possibly shot in the face or specifically in the mouth. I don't know if you heard those reports, but it looks like it was some type of ambush killing. Is that correct? Is that kind of what you heard as well?
Yeah, I'm hearing multiple stories about the, you know, where the shots were. But I have heard that it was an ambush type of killing, and it's just a sad situation. I saw the young man in court testifying, and, you know, just to know that you're here one day and gone the next day is just very horrible. And it's just been so much that has come out of this entire case. You know, a lot of twists and turns. And it's, you know, it just speaks volumes of everything. I mean, I think, and I'm sure we'll get into it, but one of the biggest things that came out of it is just there's so much corruption that's been taking place in Dallas that was finally uncovered for the whole world to see.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. I would agree with that. And I do have one more question before I defer to my my co-host to ask a question. Now, here at Collective Minds, we do consider ourselves a part of New Black Media, so we like to dive into topics that the mainstream may not touch, and you touched on corruption. So there's a witness that has done an interview. Actually, she was the one who initially took the video of Amber Geiger. Her name is Bunny Babs. I'm not sure if that's an alias or a real name, but she goes by the name of Bunny. And she initially took the video that went viral of Amber Geiger immediately after the shooting. Now, she gave some testimony to a few YouTube channels, and you can find those things online. But I wanted to ask you, Mr. Darrell K. Washington, was there a reason, do you believe, she wasn't called to the stand or why her testimony was being withheld? I'm also hearing that she was getting death threats and she's been fired, and there's been a lot of stuff going on with her. Have you heard of this witness, and was there a particular reason why she was not called by the prosecution to take the stand?
Yeah, I'm very familiar with her. You know, and she was the person, as you said, recorded Amber Geiger on the phone shortly after the shooting of Botham. Why neither side called her, I'm not sure of that. I know there was a lot that was taking place with this witness, and I think perhaps it was just decided that there was not going to be enough that she can offer to what actually happened other than she recorded the video of Amber Geiger, which was indeed used during the trial.
Right, indeed. Now, according to her, just real quick, now, according to her, she had said that she actually heard some of the things. Like, I mean, she really gave a detailed interview. Again, family, you can find this interview on YouTube. She kind of gave a detailed interview of what she heard prior to the shooting, and she also confirmed, like the rest of the witness, that she heard two shots. You know, so I just wanted to put that out there as well. So we'll get to the call lines here in 1 second, family, but I do want to give opportunity to Queen Rigel and Brother Mufasa to ask Mr. Washington a question. Go ahead.
Mufasa, you go ahead.
All right. How you doing, Mr. Washington?
Man, I'm doing good. Yourself?
Man, it's a pleasure for you to speak with you and be on. Well, I have several questions that I wanted to go over with you. First, when we're talking about the trial itself, in your practice, in your years of practice, like when the judge, first off, when the judge removed or added in the Castle Law, and the third, it was a third charge that Amber could have been convicted of. What was that third charge again, sir?
Well, it's only two that they actually presented to the jury. It was murder and manslaughter.
Right. I thought that was the third possible one that the judge removed.
Well, they talked about criminal negligence.
But
that was never presented to the jury.
Okay. Now, was that the judge's doing or was that the prosecution's doing?
That was the prosecution and the defendants. I mean, and again, that was never, to be honest, we never saw this as criminal negligence. We think murder was the right charge at all times with this because, as Amber Geiger stated in her own testimony, she intended to kill both of them.
Yes. Okay. When you now I know you were for murder. Now myself, because I see the history of how these police officers, you know, get charged. I myself was shocked. I have to tell you the truth, brother. I was shocked that they came back with the murder. I have been saying all along that I think the manslaughter would be the way to go, and it'll be that's the possible way to get the conviction. So I was shocked when the murder came back. You yourself, how do you feel about that? Were you stunned with yourself as well?
I'll be honest with you. I have the opportunity to just have just a little more details of what was going on with this case. And I know that there is a difference between murder and manslaughter. With with manslaughter, it's basically you didn't intend your act. Whatever happened, you didn't intend that to happen. It was just based on your reckless conduct. Okay, so for example, if she would have said that I was just shooting in the house to stop him from coming my way, I didn't intend to kill him, just scare him, then that would have fit more closely in with manslaughter. But in this case, she indicated that she heard somebody inside the apartment, and she went inside with the intent to kill him. So her testimony alone showed the intent. And when she did that, that's all they needed to get murder on her. So because she intended to kill him, it would have been very difficult getting manslaughter. And I think the fact that the jury came back and they said it only took them 5 minutes to determine that it was murder.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And the second thing, yeah, it makes a lot of sense to me. Yes, sir. And when they came back with the murder and the murder charge, okay, so moving on to the sentencing aspect, they 5 years to the 99 was possible, and you all asked for 28 years. Well, what based you guys asking for 28 years as a sentence?
The 28 years was just based on the amount of time that both of them was on this earth. So, as you know, we had a case not long ago where a police officer was convicted of murder here in Dallas, and they sentenced him to 15 years in prison. The kid that he killed, George Edwards, was 15 years old. So that was, it's difficult to try to put a time on a particular crime unless, you have somebody that's just, you can show that was just a cold-blooded, cold-hearted murderer. Somebody that just walked in there and just stood over somebody and started shooting them, So that was the difficulty of it all. But the thing is, this jury, number one, what many people didn't know, this jury didn't even know that it was going to be determining the sentencing. That was a total shock to them to find out that they were the ones had to set the time. And as you know, they got a chance to see what they thought was a remorseful Amber Geiger, who they thought, in their opinion, made a mistake. So it was just a very tough case. And as I told people, I wanted more time. Believe me, I wanted more time. But the fact that we were able to get a white policewoman in Dallas, Texas, convicted of murder, it's major. It's a step in the right direction because it shows that we now have jurors who are now getting the courage to convict police officers. And when we see that happen, man, it's no doubt in my mind that people are going to stop pulling that trigger so very fast. And if we can get that to happen, then we are making some progress. So I know we were all upset that it was only 10 years because we know we have African-American males, man, who are sitting in prison for a much longer time for selling marijuana where they didn't kill nobody, you know, and they get more time. But this is, we know the system that we're in. We just have to keep on pushing it until we get to a point that we have a level playing field.
Yes, sir. I commend you I was just going to say I commend you for what you did, you know, for your works in the case. And the 10 years, hey, I totally understand. I even brought that up in the beginning while we're waiting on you to come on that this was, you know, this was something, it is a step in the right direction. Because usually these police get away. They get off of stuff like this. So I commend you and your efforts, brother, and I'm pleased with the outcome. I'm not as pleased as what I saw with the judge and the bailiff and the brother, which we could talk about later.
We'll definitely talk about that, man, and we'll be able to dissect each one of them.
Yes. Now, Mr. Washington, also I'd like to say thanks for coming on as well. Now, you mentioned that it was a tough case. What made it a tough case? Was it just because of the history that we have, the Black American community?
Are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me? Can you hear me?
Mr. Washington,
are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you, Roger. We may have lost Mr. Washington.
We can hear you. Yeah, we can hear you. Is his line still on?
Yeah, his line is still on.
Okay, we can't hear you, Mr. Washington.
Okay,
well, let's try to figure out what's going on. If you're just joining us, family, this Collective Minds Radio, we are discussing the Amber Geiger murder trial with lawyer, Botham Jean's family lawyer, Mr. Darrell Washington out of Dallas, Texas, with the Washington Law Firm. So give us a call if you have any comments or questions. The number is 929-477-1697. Mr. Washington, are you there? We may have to.
I lost you guys.
Okay.
I was asking.
Now I know you mentioned that this was a tough case, and are you saying that just because of the history that the Black community usually go, you know, the history between the Black community and the justice system, is that what makes it a tough case? Because just going in, knowing how it typically goes, because just the evidence and all the information that we have, you think it was an easy case. But to you, why did you say it was a hard case to you or a tough case?
Well, it's a combination.
Okay.
If you think about it, and can you hear me?
Yeah, we hear
Yes,
you.
Indeed. Yes, indeed.
Okay, if you think about it, the Eric Garner case should have been an easy case. The Philando Castile case should have been an easy case. The Terrence Crutcher case should have been an easy case. And these were all cases that were captured on video, and we did not get a criminal conviction. So you're talking about a case that was not captured on video. That's number one. Number two, you're talking about a white policewoman who tried to make it appear as if it was a mistake, that she didn't mean to do it, and that she thought she was in her own apartment. So you got her in a 911 recording indicating that she thought she was in her apartment. Now, you have a judge that allows the castle doctrine to come in as a defense, which was very difficult. And the biggest thing was she allowed mistake of fact to come in as a defense. So you had a couple of things that came into this case that really made it difficult. So although from the surface, yes, it was a very easy case because we know we have Botham, who was lawfully in his apartment eating ice cream and watching the Thursday night football game. He wasn't breaking any laws. He should have not been killed. And from that perspective, it is no question that what she did was wrong. But the way the law is written and the way jurors get instructed sometimes make things a little more difficult than it should be, especially when we are the victims.
Right, yeah. And, cause,
yes,
and I'm glad you said that because that's exactly, I guess I should have been a little more clear because that's what I was kind of meaning. It's like, okay, she was convicted. She got the conviction was there. So it's like now you would think the, you know, it's home free after that. You know, it's like to come back with the sentencing after the verdict, it's like, oh, it was a letdown, you know, but you would think, okay, it would be an easy case as far as that is concerned. I guess that's what I should have been more clear. Once the verdict was there, it was like the rest of it should have been, you know, an easy thing to do. It's like it was a fumble, you know. So I just didn't understand that. But I guess you kind of touched base on that earlier. So you, from your perspective, it was more so that the jurors just had a little more sympathy with her.
I think so. I mean, that's what ended up happening. I don't think they should have. But, you know, again, we wanted more time. We know she's going to have to serve at least half of that sentence. But, you know, I tell people all the time, her life is not going to be the same ever again.
In a good way or a bad way? Good way or a bad way?
In a bad way. I mean, I wouldn't want to spend 2 hours in prison.
Yeah.
So to have to spend the next 10 years, she's going to pay for it. And when she comes out, she's going to be a convicted felon. She won't be able to have a registered firearm owner. It's just things are going to be very difficult. But what I hope is in that time, she reflects on what she did, and somehow find it to be able to come back and say what she did was wrong.
And she's in state penitentiary.
Yes.
She's not going to no cushiony vacation spot. Am I correct? She's going to state penitentiary, correct?
Right. And because she's a former police officer, obviously she's not going to be in the general population because we know she wouldn't last a day in general population, which means that she is going to be 23 hours of the day, she's going to be in a jail cell. She's going to only be let out 1 hour per day. So
that's right, bro.
Imagine that for the next 5 to 10 years.
Right. Okay. Now, some would say that when she gets out, she could possibly be a millionaire by way of a book deal, possibly a movie deal. She'll be doing interviews. You know, she'll be able to capitalize off the publicity of murdering Botham John. So some would argue that she would come out and, you know, possibly be able to retire and tour telling her story about how she murdered Botham John. Do you have any thoughts on that?
You know, that's a whole lot of speculation. It's not anything that's written in stone. But, you know, again, I am most pleased that the fact that this family feels good that Amber Guy gets held responsible for the death of both of them. And I'll tell you, I don't know if there's the amount of money, there's enough for book deals, et cetera, that anyone could give me to spend 10 years in prison.
Mm-hmm. Indeed.
You know, so
especially on
five years.
Or even a year in prison.
Yeah.
Right.
Especially on solitary confinement. As a cop.
Yes, indeed.
As a cop.
Yes, indeed.
Ain't no cakewalk.
Not at all.
Yes, indeed. If you just joined us, family, this is Collective Minds Radio. We are joined by Mr. Daryl K. Washington. He's one of the lawyers for the Baltimore-John family. We'll get to the call lines in 1 second. Now, I do have one question. If you can give us your legal expertise, because for me as a layman watching the case, and I was able to watch every day of the trial, including the sentencing phase, and for me, I felt like the prosecution dropped the ball. Number one, I feel like the Amber Geiger statements were kind of, you know, it seems like she lied from her initial statements to when she got on the stand. One thing in particular that I thought the prosecution kind of glossed over was when she said that she did try to administer aid and she gave him a sternum rub. And then the prosecution mentioned, well, you didn't have blood on your hands, and he didn't really let her respond, and he kind of glossed over that. Number two, I thought they could have really kind of horned in on the racist text messages that she sent, especially during the sentencing phase and cross-examining her character witnesses. I don't feel like they went hard on the racist text messages that she sent, and I felt like that could have really helped the case, but I felt like the prosecution was kind of lenient on that. And again, that's me from a layman standpoint, but I wanted to get your expertise on that. Do you think, you know, that they kind of dropped the ball when it comes to her testimony and also the text messages as far as, you know, her character?
Well, you know, you make all great points. And I will tell you, man, I've been doing this for 20 years. And there are things that take place, you know, during the trial that when I go back and review it, I say, man, I wish I'd have done this. I wish I'd have said this, et cetera. And it's kind of easy, you know, when you're looking back at it to say, well, they should have, you know, there are multiple things they should have done. But I had the opportunity, man, to read the transcript of interviews of the jurors. And, you know, a lot of the things that we thought were important, this jury came back and said that was not in their thought process.
Okay.
You know, one, it didn't have anything for them, anything to do with them coming back and finding murder. And these guys even went as far as saying that they have all said something crazy in text messages or whatever that they regret. So for some reason, they didn't hold that against her. But let me just say, man, something that's so very important. I just don't know if everybody knows this. I don't know if all the listeners know this. But the breakup, the makeup of this jury, right, the jurors were majority black. I mean, so it's not like we had a majority white jury. And
right.
Out of the 16 jurors, four of which were alternates, seven were black. So the majority of the people sitting, you know, sitting up watching this case were black. So at the end of the day, do I think they had the opportunity to really let their voices be heard? Man, there's no doubt. I mean, this verdict, I think, represented all the times that, you know, African-American males have been falsely accused by someone. I mean, and they could have, you know, allowed this country to see, we're not going to tolerate that. We're going to give 30 years, 40 years. They had that in their power, but unfortunately it didn't happen. But again, I have to always try to find some positive in it. And the fact that, you know, she got convicted of murder means a lot to us. It meant a lot to the family.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. I will say that because I was actually shocked by the conviction as well. Let's go to the call lines, family. We're joined by attorney Daryl K. Washington. He's a representative of the Baltimore-John family, one of the representatives along with Lee Merritt and Benjamin Crump. So let's go to the call lines, family.
Okay. We're going to go area code 314-381. Call, are you on with Collective Minds Radio? Do you have a question or do you have a comment?
Well, I got some comments. How you guys doing
tonight?
We're doing good.
Hey,
if you can make them brief, caller. Yeah, if you can make them brief so we can get some of the callers, we appreciate it. But thank you, caller.
This is very important. Let me ask these questions that you've been trying to ask. And, you know, I sat on a jury selection with that case with Louisiana State University and the hazing where the kids got killed from over drinking. And I was a juror and asked questions regarding my ability to make a decision based on the preponderance of evidence, clear and convincing evidence, and also beyond a reasonable doubt. But I got kicked off when I asked the question. But here's the thing. She's been found guilty. All right, let's get past that. But I want to go back to the prosecution, and you have to weigh this. And also, I want to know, can't the family file a civil suit in case she does profit off of the position that she in later on? But the thing I'm going to say is the prosecution in the interviewing of jurors, shouldn't they have not asked the jurors, would they have been able to render the maximum sentence? And that's another thing, being that the jurors didn't know that they had to do that. Well, it might have played out okay with finding her guilty, because if you had had the juror who would have been chosen without asking about the sentences, if you ask the sentences, being that these jurors are probably, you know, have some religious conviction, they probably would have said, no, I couldn't give her no 99 years. But, you know, I don't know. And as far as family members forgiving, you know, family members do that all the time. Look at that case in the Walter Scott case with the officer, white officer Michael Slager. He got 20 years,
right.
But his family, Walter Scott family, forgave him. And even the city council forgave whoever done it before they knew exactly who done it. I mean, that's just the convictions that people come up with. So
yes, indeed. Did you have a question for our guest, or you just wanted to make that
Well,
comment?
He understands what I'm trying to get out. The instructions given by the juror, by the prosecutor. And also, I'm sure that you're going to bring up ethics concern with the judge, because Amber committed a crime against the state of Texas. And the judge represents the state of Texas. But the behavior that she demonstrated at the end of the trial, isn't that kind of unethical? Is there some conflicts that are going on there? Those two points.
All right.
Instructions
okay.
to the juror
right
and that. Yeah.
Yes, thank
right
you,
on,
caller. Did you want to respond, Mr. Washington?
I mean, obviously, the caller is a very educated person with the jury system. And he's absolutely right. Doing voir dire, that's a question that probably should have been more focus. Asking, you know, if this person is convicted of murder, how many of you all would have any problems with sentencing the person to, you know, 20 years or 30 years, et cetera. But, you know, you really have to be careful in voir dire, because you really can eliminate a lot of good jurors who you want for your case. And as you guys know, man, it was very difficult even keeping this case here in Dallas, because the defense wanted to get this case removed out of Dallas, and we all know why they wanted to get it removed out, because they wanted to have it somewhere where people love police officers and would not find against a police officer for no reason at all. So that alone, man, I'm just glad that we were able to get it kept here. Again, why this jury did not decide to give her more time, I just don't know. I mean, it's just hard to rationalize with that. And, man, they came out very fast, too. So
yes,
it didn't take them a whole lot. It didn't take up a lot of time to reach that decision. But, again,
yes,
man, all we have to do is contact Eric Garner's family. All we have to do is contact Terrence Crutcher's family. I can give
right.
you 10 people here in Dallas and ask them, how does it feel for somebody to take your kid's life and they walk and they feel, and
that's
you
right.
know that they're going to still be a police officer.
That's
and that
right.
is that is a hard feeling. I mean, just realistically, man, you know, after you get over this, 10, 20, 30 years in your mind is all the same. It's just all the same. You just want somebody to be held accountable for your child's death. As far as
that's
the
correct.
Civil side, we have filed a civil lawsuit against Amber Geiger and the city of Dallas. And the caller makes a great point about, you know, if Amber Geiger goes out, if we happen to get a judgment on her and she goes out and get a $1 million book deal, well, we know that she's going to be working for us. So, you know,
that's
we
right.
would encourage her to get the movie deal and the book
that's
deal
right.
together so that we can garnish it off.
That's right.
Right.
Hey, do I have
yes,
time
indeed.
To respond to one thing, or do you want to just go on to the caller?
Do
I have time to respond
yeah,
to one thing?
Make it real quick. If you do it under a minute.
It's going to be quick. It's going to be quick.
Go ahead,
make
my brother.
Plain. Because the caller had brought up about the forgiveness and when, you know, the Walter Scott family forgiving him. My thing is, why is it always us that are doing the forgiving? I haven't seen personally, maybe Mr. Washington has, but I don't see other races of people so quick to forgive us when we up against a murder or we defending ourselves. So I don't understand why it's always us that got to be so quick to say, I forgive you, I love you. That's all I want to say.
Can I respond to you real quick?
Yes,
oh,
indeed.
Yeah. Go ahead.
All right, and I'll be very honest with you. When Brandt did that in the courtroom, all right, myself, Benjamin Crump, Lee Merritt, we were all looking at each other because we didn't know what Brandt was going to say at all, at all. Mm-hmm. And to be honest with you, if Brandt had written out a statement and said he was going to do that, I probably wouldn't have allowed him to do it. So mm-hmm. I tell people, man, sometimes – we all say that we want to follow the direction of God, and God is the head of our lives. And you know, we wear these little bands. I see people wear these little bands around their wrists. What would Jesus do? And all this. And sometimes I say, do we really mean that, or is that just something that we say? Brandt is 18 years old. All right.
That's right.
And
right.
This young man, I've had the opportunity to spend time with the family in St. Lucia. And I have seen Brandt. I've been with them for 10 hours in a day, right? Where he doesn't say one word, not one word, because he is hurting just that bad. And he has that inside of him, man. So for a reason, none of us ever understand why. I still don't understand why something led this kid to do this. I don't think it was a sign that we forgive Amber for what she did and there should be no consequences. I think, man, it was more for him than it was for her.
Right.
You know, he had to release that demon out of his body. And can you imagine what this woman now has to deal with? The entire country saw both of them come out of Brandt, all right? And this woman has to sit up in that jail cell and have to think about the type of person that she murdered. So I hope somehow her family and everybody else who's involved can ask for some type of redemption for what they took away. And I'll just say this, man. I know African Americans, we tend to do this more than any other race of people. But, man, we just good people. That's just in us. That's just, you know, it's hard to explain, but I never lost a brother or a sister, so I don't know if I would do the same thing. I'll be honest with you. I'll probably be like one of these memes, you know, where they show the guy jumping over the table. That might be me. I don't know, you know, but just the power of God, man, until we are actually in that exact situation, all we can do is just talk about it.
Right. Yes, indeed.
That. That.
Yeah, that's much respect. And I don't want to go in on a young brother because he is 18. And I do understand, like, we did a whole show on forgiveness and being able to release that type of energy from yourself and from your heart. But on the flip side of that, I think when you do it in a public display like that, it makes it dangerous for black people. And I say that because I believe, in my opinion, it sends the wrong message to people that want to harm us. It kind of puts us in a vulnerable position by saying we don't necessarily want justice. All we want to do is just forgive. So you can, you know, you can smack us around, you can mistreat us, you can even kill us, and we don't want justice. We just want to forgive. So I don't want to, you know, bash the young man, but I think that message being out there as far as being very forgiving is very dangerous, and it sends the wrong message to people that want to harm us. Go ahead.
I totally agree with you on that. But again, an 18-year-old kid, we can all agree that an 18-year-old kid don't speak for us.
Yes, indeed.
Had his mother gone out and did that in the courtroom, his sister or his father, you know, then it would be different. But this is an 18-year-old kid. Now, if you want to talk about the bailiff who was rubbing Amber's hair, now that's a different story. That's a, you know, you know, there's just
right
no
now,
explanation.
Bro,
there's no explanation.
The
judge.
Right now, brother.
Yeah, it's all the same. You know, those are different conversations, man.
Yes, indeed. You're absolutely right. Let's go to the call lines, family. If you're just joining us, it's Collective Minds Radio. We are pleased to have a special guest with us, Mr. Daryl K. Washington. So let's go to the call lines and try to get some questions or comments in, please.
Okay. Area code 315-767. Call you on with Collective Minds Radio. Do you have a question or a comment?
No, I don't have any comments right now.
All right.
Okay,
thank you for calling in. Yes, indeed.
Okay,
thank you.
Okay, area code 319-572. Caller, you're on with Collective Minds Radio. Do you have a question or a comment?
No, y'all pretty much been hitting everything I was thinking about, so I'm just going to finish listening.
Yes,
okay,
indeed.
Thank you, caller. Before
we get to that caller there, just real quick. Mr. Washington, now, since we talked about the judge, you know, and the bailiff, but in particular the judge, what were your thoughts when you saw the judge come off the bench, give Amber Geiger a gift in the form of a Bible, and then proceed to hug her? What were your thoughts about that?
Here we go.
Man, I was in disbelief, you know, and all of my practice, I have not done it. I have seen it that way. You know, I have just not seen it done that way, and I think it was not appropriate to do it, especially knowing that there are going to be some post-trial motions that needs to be decided by the court. So, you know, you have to be able to, the court has to be able to show that it's fair and impartial. And by doing that, I think, you know, sends out a very bad message, because if she messages around and grants some motion on behalf of Amber Geiger, then how do you think the entire country would view that?
Mm-hmm.
So,
right.
Exactly. Did she even give Botham's mother a Bible or anything? Did she give her anything, a hug?
She did hug the family.
She did give a hug. Yeah, she did. She did. I saw
she
that.
She did. Yeah.
Now, in terms of, because this could be a safety issue as well, in terms of her allowing the defendant or Botham John's brother to hug Amber, that's also a safety concern as well. Have you ever seen anything like that where the victim's sibling or family member actually hugged the convicted murderer of their family? Have you ever seen anything like that?
I've never seen anything like that at all, man. Again, I know, and I could tell you all that Brent was led, man, by his faith and his convictions. But can you imagine if it was not Brent and somebody else who was just using it as a setup?
Yeah,
and pulled
something
out of their pocket.
Yeah.
And stabbed her. Can you imagine the liability that the court would have? Which
yes,
is why
indeed.
You don't do that type of stuff.
Yes.
You know, it just wasn't good. It turned out to be something that we're going to be talking about for a long time, but we all know, man, it could have gone an entirely different direction. That could have resulted in somebody else's death, life, you know?
That's, Yes, indeed.
I got to ask you this question. Do you think because it was a judge and a bailiff, do you think in their minds blue lives trumps black lives? Is that why they were so sympathetic to Amber?
Man, it's hard. Again, there is no explanation I can give you for that bailiff rubbing in Amber's hair, all right? I can't explain that one at all. But I can tell you, man, there was just a feeling that was in that courtroom after Brandt did that. I'm telling you, man, there was not a dry eye in the courtroom. All the prosecutors were crying. I mean, I've just never seen anything like it. You know, so my only thing, I'm telling you, man, the only prayer I had was that people don't take this as meaning that Amber Geiger is forgiven for what she did. And that's all I want people to know. Man, and I'm telling you, it's going to be change that's going to come about because the chief of police just a couple of days ago had a press conference where they are starting an investigation of a lot of things that came out from the trial. So,
yes, indeed.
It's just going to be some stuff that happens, man. So I just hope that the focus doesn't become on Brandt, and lose the fact that, man, we got a police officer convicted of murder.
That's right.
Yes, indeed.
You know, because
yes, indeed.
I'm telling you, I read the Facebook posts. I read Instagram posts, all right? And I know that over 90% of the stuff I used to read, people were doubting that there was going to be a conviction at all.
That's true.
They were like, oh, she's going to walk. I guarantee you she's going to walk.
Yeah.
All right?
True.
Yes, sir.
So it's not like everybody was saying that we guaranteed was going to have a murder conviction. So,
man,
I try to look at the things that are the good things. And, again, we can't stop, man. We have to keep on pushing. This is the second murder conviction we got in Dallas, Texas, all right, in less than 2 years. And I have another trial that's going to be starting in February of 2020 for the murder of Genevieve Dawes, a 21-year-old girl that was killed by a Dallas police officer. And I feel very comfortable that's going to be another police officer that's going to be convicted of a crime. So,
yes, indeed.
As long as we continue to push it, as long as we get these officers indicted and convicted, man, our family members, our children, our friends, we all have a better chance of not being gunned down by a bad police officer. And that's what we all want.
That's right. Yes, indeed. Let's hit the call lines, Roger, and see if we got some callers.
Okay. Let's go to area code 631-522. Call you on with Collective Minds Radio. Do you have a question or comment?
Yes. When the people in the courtroom, their behavior is more akin to a Stockholm syndrome. It was like watching a fabricated show or like a pre-orchestrated show to where the man had a good point. It is totally out of a character to go hug a murderer after they've been convicted. You know, and then the people with the forgiveness, that's the Stockholm syndrome. To not even, you know, where are her family saying, we're sorry that she killed your son? That's non-existent. And that's my comment.
Right.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
I can tell you, man, if it makes any difference, the family tried to get to my clients on a number of occasions. But again, man, it was just a bad situation. I hate it. It ended the way it did because I was never in my entire career, man, so proud of the support that we got from people in every single state throughout the United States. It was the conversation, man, and it was the conversation that we needed. And people wanted their voices to be heard. And I plead with everybody, let's not focus on that hug. But let's focus
right.
on the fact, man, that we took a police officer down and we're going to take, and the word is going to be out that, hey, if you mess with our children, if you shoot an unarmed male or lady, we're taking you down. That's the bottom
That's right.
line. And that we want that to be the message. Let's not
yes,
lose
indeed.
That on that, man, at all.
Yes. Yes, indeed. And
within
I think
within
also,
that message,
also, yeah.
Within that message, there's another
Go
message
ahead,
that says, why we shouldn't have to take a police officer and do that. The law is supposed to do that. So the message within that is saying that the law is still unjust to say that if that happens, you know, we have to get such a big push to do that when there shouldn't be any push. It, the law should take care of that. And it's another form of the Stockholm conditioning to say, oh, we're going to no, we're not going to do anything. That's the state's responsibility, just the way it was the responsibility of the civil servant not to hug that person, not to to touch their head. Just the physical contact alone showed like a clown show. It really did. So why would we, if the law is right, why would we ever have to worry about interfering with that? That tells us that it's wrong. You see, to have to interfere with something that should be working already proves logically the way that it ain't working.
Right, and
indeed,
let me ask you a question.
Thank
you. Let me ask you a question.
Go ahead.
Do you really think if we had 12 white jurors serving that it would have been the same?
That's proving my point. It's proving my point that that the law doesn't work. That if you see this happen, and look at the if it was 12 white jurors, right? How can I say with those people now from previous instances like that? Yeah, you're right. She probably wouldn't have got anything. But that's the problem. To look at it and say, okay, she got it now, and now the same victims are exhibiting the Stockholm syndrome to say, oh, you know what? Let me hug you. Why do I want to touch some? You know, you look at that. It's like something is mentally wrong in that picture. The fact that they wouldn't take into account the tweets, the other people that tried to fiddle with stuff, that alone speaks, you know, volumes of stuff, that they try to change stories. Oh, you know, well, you know, he's bad. You know, just anything to put on the guy. That shows incredible amounts of a problem. Now, yes, it did. It was shocking to see that anything did happen. But to say that that's a victory and that we're going to stay on it, it's like that's not the people's job. You got to think about things. Yeah, you know,
absolutely
it's just a logical way.
Yeah,
No, that means the law don't work. That means when a white kid rapes, like in the other state, the girl behind the dumpster doesn't even get 6 months. He gets 6 months, does three, and gets out. And then they say, you know, that's not even rape. That's so we'll call it sexual assault or something. And then the black guy.
Can I respond to you for a second?
Yeah, let him respond, and we want to get to some other callers. Thank you for your call. Let him respond. Thank you.
Are you familiar with the case in Minnesota where a black police officer killed a white lady in Minnesota? All right?
Yes, Muhammad Noor.
Right, and he went to trial with two counts, and he only got 12 and a half years, a brother, for killing a white lady. 12 and a half years, and Amber Geiger got only 2 years left. So it tells you how very difficult it is to convict police officers. Now, the fact that we had five jurors who were serving, five black jurors, it shows, man, that the system is changing because historically when I go to trial and the judge is talking to potential jurors, and she say, is there any reason why someone cannot serve? Man, almost 95% of the time, the people who are trying to get off of the jury, serving on the jury, are people who look like us. So the fact that we have five blacks on the jury is showing, man, that we are progressing and we realize and we starting to know that in order for us to get justice, we have to be part of the system. We have to be part of the individuals who enforce the law. Because the judge can only enforce the law when there's a trial by judge. But when there's a trial by jury, they're instructed of the law. And we have to hope that there are not individuals who are serving on that jury who are coming with their minds already made up, because we know there are so many African Americans sitting in prison right now for crimes they didn't commit, because there were juries that didn't even give them a chance because of the color of their skin. So
that's right.
We have to continue to have these conversations and let us know that we have to be a part of the system. We can no longer afford not to serve on juries. We have to, because every time we have black, more than two or three blacks serve on a jury, it increases our chances that we're going to get some type of justice. So, again, we got this police officer convicted, all right?
Right.
And we're going to continue to get these police officers convicted. When Doug Williams was the quarterback with the Washington Redskins, we only had one or two black quarterbacks in the NFL, all right?
Yes,
we have many more today. It takes time, and we have to continue to work, man, and we can't get – I know it's frustrating. I deal with this every day, 10 hours of the day. So for us to have some progress, man, it's encouraging to me, and I just hope now that we understand the system, we continue to be involved, man, and we're gonna beat this system. I know we will.
Yes, indeed. And if you're just joining us, family, this is Collective Minds Radio. We are joined by a very special guest, Mr. Darrell K. Washington. He's one of the lawyers for the Botham Johns family. The Amber Geiger murder trial just concluded this past week, and we're having a great discussion, and we'll go to the call lines. Let's go to call lines, Queen Roger.
Okay, and now, callers, please make your questions and your comments really brief. We're going to go area code 315-767. Call you on with Collective Minds Radio. What's your comment?
Hey there, Collective Minds. So my comment is, what we witnessed in this case was female privilege. And you want to talk about all the Stockholm stuff. It's not really Stockholm. It's female privilege. If it had been a white man, no matter how sorry he was or how much he cried, he wouldn't have got the same treatment as she got. She was convicted of murder but received a manslaughter sentence. And it's because the judge and everybody else felt sorry for her because she was a female. If she'd been a male, it wouldn't have played out like that. This is female privilege, and it's just a part of our nature as humans. We always want to take care of the women, and we feel sorry for women. So it's not so much Stockholm as it is the fact that she was a female.
Okay. Well,
and then when you wanted to, yes, and then the lawyer spoke on the Brock Turner case. That boy did not rape that girl behind the dumpster.
Okay, well. All right, we don't want to get too far off topic.
I know you don't want to get into it, but that was misinformation. He did not rape her, and he should not have been sentenced. That girl did not get raped, and she's making millions off of a lie.
Okay, we'll leave that alone. Thank you, caller. Appreciate
Thank
it.
You. Thank you, caller. Let's go to the call lines real fast. Area code 314-616. Caller, you on with Collective Minds Radio. Do you have a question or a comment?
Good evening, everyone. How's everyone doing?
Hey, how you doing, Paula? Thanks for calling in.
Yes, appreciate
you. Real brief, I want to backtrack for a split second with the situation in Minnesota. The guy got 12 years. I find that funny because in Minnesota, the guy that the officer killed, Orlando Castillo, didn't get anything. And so that was a situation that happened in the same state. But going back to this case, I just felt like everything in the courtroom was scripted. Maybe I was delusional, but it seemed like the officer that was sitting behind Amber Geiger kind of signaled the bailiff to go up there and comb her hair. And my issue with the whole situation with, you know, her getting the manslaughter sentence or whatever, is we talk about, you know, civil courts. When I see people like Benjamin Crump, who's an ambulance teacher, you see these people that, you know, they make deals with these families to where it becomes about a financial compensation, but we overlook the fact that these settlements are not paid out through the police department. This is taxpayer money that's paying for these cases. So that's my situation with that. And that's all I really have to say, that, you know, with these cases, you know, it sends the wrong message that if you mistreat black people, it's okay because you're going to get paid for it. Whether it's Mike Brown or this case or whatever, it seems like when I see officers like Benjamin Crump, it's never about justice. Is always about a financial reward because they get paid for that too.
Yes,
well,
indeed.
Mr. Washington
works
with Benjamin Crump, so let's give him an opportunity to respond to this.
Yes, indeed. Thank you, caller, for your comment.
let me just respond to the comment that he said about Ben and the financial rewards. And, you know, unfortunately, there is a misnomer about, you know, civil rights attorneys and getting paid for the work that they do. We take the let's just use the O.J. Simpson case, for example. When O.J. Simpson got acquitted for the killing of Nicole, everybody was excited about that. But the family filed a civil lawsuit against O.J., and they were able to get monetary damages. This is how a system works, that, you know, you have civil lawsuits and you have the criminal case. But I can tell you, man, I had the opportunity to work with Benjamin and a lot of the attorneys out there, man. People don't understand what goes on in the background. These are genuinely people who care and who care about the family. And so much time is placed into these families. And I will tell you, if you are doing it for the money, this is not the law you would be practicing. I can assure you that. A great majority of families who lose their children never get any type of financial settlement. So it is not what people really think and believe, but the only way you can, one, encourage cities to make some type of change is by, you know, having criminal damages against them.
No, I just said it's to hit that pocketbook. I was agreeing with you, brother. Go ahead.
That's the only way we can do it. And it's not taxpayers' money, because once that money is coming, taken away from us, taken out our checks, it's not our money anymore. I don't, any money that I pay taxes on, I mean, any taxes that I pay, I consider it gone. I mean, so that's what they use. That's just part of the system. But again, and we work hard to try to get justice. And can you imagine if nobody was bringing attention to these matters, if nobody took these cases? I mean, can you imagine what would really happen?
Yes,
yes, indeed.
You know,
yes,
Mr.
indeed.
Washington, yeah. I was a person who really was turning into Crump before he came on our show and enlightened us to some things a couple of months ago. So I agree with you, brother. He definitely changed my eyesight on how I look at what he does and what you do and, you know, other civil rights attorneys.
Man,
yes, indeed.
It's a tough business, but we do it, man, because we love it, man, and we generally want to see change. We want to
yes,
see
indeed.
Change, man.
Yes, indeed. Much respect, and we're coming down to the last 20 minutes of the show. Now, I do want to give credit where credit is due as well. I saw your partner Lee Merritt after the verdict or the sentencing, and he was like, the job is not over, because he still wants to go after Dallas police corruption. And
right.
That's a major issue in every major city. So I just want to give credit where credit is due, because police corruption is very rampant in these cities. And for him to still be on the, you know, on the hunt for corrupt police, you know, I just want to commend you guys and commend him for that. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
Yes, indeed. So let's see if we can get a couple more calls in here, and then we'll have to wrap it up, family. Queen
Rodgers.
We'll
take one more caller. Okay, we'll take one more caller, guys, because we've been in Mr. Washington dinner time. But let's go area code 314. 568.
I love you.
You
can tell I love the show.
Yes, indeed. We appreciate
and
you, man. We appreciate
you. Yes, we do. Area code 314-568. Call you on with Collect the Minds Radio. Do you have a question or a comment? Make it plain.
Yeah, real quick. My question is, when all the jurors, not the jurors, but the bailiffs and the judges come off with their behavior and the things that 99% of the world think is unfair, can they be in any form or manner get themselves in any trouble for doing those type of things? Like, is it kicked out of court cases, or even like the bailiff? Can she be reprimanded and fired from her job, things like that?
Oh, good question. Let me respond. Thank you, Tyler. Great question.
I can tell the caller that there have been a number of complaints, ethnic complaints, that have been filed on the judge, against the judge, since this has happened. I don't know what happened with the bailiff. Again, I thought it was totally inappropriate because I have never seen them treat an African-American that way. You know, if you're going to do it for one, do it for all. And that's, you know, it just wasn't right at all. So hopefully there are going to be some changes that's going to take place. And the reason changes are going to take place, not because we are saying they need to take place, but because of all the listeners, everybody that's calling in saying that it's wrong. When people collectively call out a wrong, that's the way you get change. And I think the callers, everybody, they are right. I mean, nothing should be done in that courtroom by a judge or a bailiff that make one race of people feel uncomfortable or feel like they're being treated unfairly. And I'm glad that you guys are voicing your opinion. And what I am most glad about, man, is people are involved in the process. And when people continue to be involved in the process, man, that makes much of a difference. It makes a difference, man, because it forces these elected judges to have to be transparent. They have to be transparent. And if you don't do something right, guess what? They're going to vote you out.
There you go, brother. Exactly. Hopefully the people of Dallas hear that. She can be elected out. You don't have to stand up for that. You have to stand for that. She can be elected right out of that position.
That's right. Yes, indeed. All right, family. This has been, I want to say this, because this has been an amazing, amazing couple of weeks. This trial has really touched a lot of people emotionally, not just in the United States, but across the world. So I want to thank you, Mr. Darrell Washington, you know, for coming on the show this evening and blessing us with your presence and your expertise. Is there anything you want to let the family know? You know, how can we get in touch with you? Any social media or anything you want to let us know before you go, sir?
Yeah, if they ever want to reach out to me, we are always sharing a number of legal issues. I'm on Instagram. I'm located under Attorney Darrell Washington, so you can find me on Instagram. I'm also on Facebook under Darrell K. Washington or Darrell Kevin Washington, so you can find me there. But listen, I love what y'all doing on this show. I'll be honest with you. I have two filings, man, that I have to get done tonight. And initially wasn't going to be on the call but for 15 minutes. But, man, these shows are so very important. The questions that y'all asking deserve answers. And it's incumbent on us, man, that we have these conversations, man, with the public. I love to have these conversations with people, man, where it's a, you know, it's a free exchange. People are free to voice their opinions. We all have opinions. But we can all learn from each other, man. I learn from people every single day. You know, I learn from the callers. So I just encourage people to continue to talk about these issues. And as long as we have these conversations taking place, we are on to making change. Without conversations, we can make no change.
That's right. Yes, indeed.
It is what it is.
Yeah, one more thing. You said you had a case coming up in the beginning of the year 2020. Can you give us the name so the family and we can follow that particular case that you got going?
Yeah. Man, and I want y'all to – there's a YouTube video on the case. The young lady's name is Genevieve. That's G-E-N-E-V-I-V-E, last name Dawes, D-A-E-S. Genevieve Dawes, 21-year-old, was killed in Dallas, Texas. I want y'all to look at the raw video footage, man. You will never see anything like that. We also have another case in San Antonio, Texas, with Charles Roundtree. Another young 18-year-old kid, man, who was in the house. Police officer walked in unannounced and just started shooting. Crazy, man. I know it sounds crazy, but I just want y'all to look at these stories, man. Again, for every Botham John case, man, there are thousands of other cases that people have never heard about because it doesn't get the same media coverage, man, because people think it's okay to kill somebody if they don't have a college degree or if they've been in trouble with the law before or if they don't have a certain economic level. They think it's okay, man, but it's not okay. You know, if everybody deserves the same respect. Everybody deserves the same attention and same legal representation.
Facts.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. That's well said.
It's
and
totally
I guess on that note, yeah, on that note,
send
we can
that
wrap
to
it
me,
up.
Mr. Washington, that information, you can send that email we was corresponding with. You can email it to me or text it to me so that way we'll have it. I'll make sure I share it with everyone.
Okay, I definitely will do that.
Yes, indeed. So once again, thank you for coming on. Thank you for sharing some of your evening with us. We really do appreciate
you,
it. Tell Mr. Benjamin Crump as well. We appreciate him and also Lee Merritt. And we wish you guys much success, and we'll definitely be following along with your cases that's coming up in the future.
All right.
Yeah,
thank you guys very much
for
having me.
We'd like to have you back on one day. We have to keep us informed on what you're doing.
Yes,
I would
indeed.
Love to. I'd love to join
all
you
right.
all. Okay.
You enjoy your
thank
evening,
you
sir.
So
thank
much.
You.
Thank you.
All right. Bro. Y'all welcome.
Thank you. Peace. Peace, peace. All right. So, family, that was Daryl K. Washington from the Washington Law Firm out of Dallas, Texas. He is one of the lawyers for the Botham John family. And as you know, the Amber Geiger trial, murder trial, wrapped up this week. She was convicted. They gave her 10 years. There were a lot of other shenanigans going on as far as the judge hugging a convicted murderer and the bailiff stroking her hair, things like that. Again, I don't like to go in too hard on a young brother because he is only 18. So, you know, he may get 30 one day and be like, damn, I was tripping. You know what I'm saying? So we want to give him that opportunity maybe to, you know, maybe to grow or reconcile what he did or what type of position by doing that publicly that it puts black people as a whole in. You know what I'm saying?
Said it was
but we don't want to go too hard on
him. He said it was kind of random.
And that was, yeah, exactly. And that was going to be one of my questions because there's a lot of speculation online whether the lawyers or they may have put him up to it. But he kind of cleared that up and said, no, he didn't know about it. And had he known, he probably would have talked to the young man. So, you know, we'll just leave it at that. Anything else y'all want to share? We still got a little time. Queen Rigel, Brother Mufasa. Anything else you want to put out there?
Yeah, I'll say this.
I'm not gonna beat up
on the young man as bad as I want to. I just don't
right.
need to be schooled on some things. You know,
right.
we need to just keep on living. I'll leave it up to people to decide if he's suffering from Stockholm syndrome or not. As far
right.
as the judge
yeah.
and the bailiff go, same. You can decide. You can sit back and discern. Are they suffering from Stockholm syndrome or Blue Lives over Black Lives Matter syndrome? Because it's something. They're suffering from one of the two. And
yeah,
I don't want to, like Mr. Washington said, I don't want to take away from the fine job that they did. The prosecution did a fantastic job in this case. I appreciate what they did. I appreciate the work of Mr. Washington. And I think they did a great job. Like you said, this is a step in the right direction because usually these cops, they walk away from stuff like this. You know, to be
right,
convicted of murder, I would have.
Yeah.
I just knew. Well, we know we've talked about. I knew she was going to get hit with possibly manslaughter. But when they came
right.
back with that charge of murder, I was shocked. And he was writing his act in those 5.5 to 10 that she do. She's doing hard time in a state penitentiary and have to be in solitary confinement too. If that will break you if you're not mentally sound, that will break you. Just imagine, just go to your
right.
home.
Okay, I think I would probably prefer it. I would probably prefer if
right.
I ever have to go away for a long time. I would ask for
I
it.
I would too.
Well, I'm gonna tell you,
I don't
want to
be near no one.
Right.
This how y'all
exactly.
can practice it. You can practice by taking all your electronics out your room, take you a couple of books in your room, and stay in your bedroom. I almost want to say your bathroom because, you know, it's a small space. Stay in your bedroom
right.
23 hours, and you come out just 1 hour of a day. Imagine
you
have to do that
you know,
for five
you know why
and
that's
a half.
Not the same?
I would prefer
you know
that.
Why that's not the same? Yeah, because I don't think that's the same because if I go out of my bedroom, I'm cool. if I go out of the solitary confinement, I'm amongst a whole bunch of folks that I don't know what's up. I don't know
you
what's going to happen.
Pop, right.
I don't know. So I don't know. Please, Judge, can I get out off the bat? I'm asking for that.
Right. Now, look, now I do want to do this real quick. I do want to clear this up because Daryl K. Washington was not part of the prosecution. He is the family attorney, basically the civil rights attorney. I think he's going to, file some civil suits on behalf of the attorney. So he was not part of the prosecution. Now, Mufasa said he thought the prosecution did a great job. I differ on that. I thought they did not do a good job. I thought when Amber Geiger was on the stand, they did the one prosecutor did kind of go in on her. But I thought there were a few things that they could have hammered down. Like I mentioned, they could have really got her on the text messages, proving what type of character she had, all the posts that she had on Pinterest and all these things where she was talking about killing. I mean, she was making jokes about MLK. Now, if you making jokes about Martin Luther King, that shows that you are really a different type of racist. And she implied that she was a racist as well, because there were some text messages about a dog, and she was like, she said the dog was racist, and then she texts back, "I'm just like it," you know, basically implying that she was racist like the dog. So I thought that they dropped the ball on a lot of things. And then one last thing, when they instructed, because remember, she could have got a fine from $0 to $10,000. They specifically instructed the jurors to put zero for the fine. Now, I don't know why they did that, but I believe she should have got all the punishment that was on the table. And they put zero as the fine when she could have been fined up to $10,000. So I didn't think they did a good job. You know, I thought there was a lot of things. I thought they were on code with white supremacy by being lenient, definitely in the citizen phase. And, you know, they could have cross-examined some of her character witnesses. So that's just my opinion. I thought the prosecution was on code and being kind of lenient in the sentencing phase. But, you know, that's just my opinion.
They got a conviction.
They did get a murder conviction.
Conviction and sentencing.
But that wasn't them. Hey, but that wasn't them, though.
That wasn't them, yeah.
Yeah,
but
that's
then,
the jury.
Right. So on the citizen phase, you want to go in on her character. Yeah, you want to go in on her character. You want to show that you can kind of show that she has a flawed character. Like, she doesn't really mess with black people. And the other interesting thing, and then, you know, we down to the last 3 minutes. She, in my opinion, is so much of a racist. The only two black people they can find, one of them was a crackhead. Like, you could make this up if you was writing a Hollywood movie. They had to bring a crackhead to vouch for Amber Geiger being a good person. Like, come on, fam. It looked like the lady had just hit the pipe. I'm not disparaging the sister, but they had to bring a crackhead on stage to vouch for this woman. That's how much she don't mess with black people. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, I thought they just could have went in on a lot of things that they just kind of fell back on. Her lying on the stand saying she gave him aid, which she said she did a sternum rub. And the prosecution mentioned, hey, you ain't had no blood on your hands. And just kind of kept going. So, you know, I just thought those were the things they could have went in on if they really wanted to put the nail in the coffin, if they wanted to get that maximum sentence or close to it. So, you know, but again, great show, y'all. We down at the last minute. I'm going to let y'all wrap it up. Peace. Thanks to all the callers. Thanks to Derek K. Washington. Thank you. Thank you,
y'all.
You
wrapped it up already. Thank you for calling.
Sign us out,
this
right?
was a great show. We'll see everybody or hear everybody next week on Sunday, 6 p.m.
Yes,
to 7:30 p.m. Central Standard Time. Follow us on all the social media outlets. Again, if you have any show topic ideas, feel free to email us at collectiveminds@yahoo.com. peace. It's been a great show. See you next week.
Hey.
Collective Minds Radio.
Stand on your square. We on the earth. We about to earn out. Tune in and turn it up to hear what we talking about, whether it's old.